It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation. An engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
That's right. If it's over a 10-mile-an-hour wind, I don't ride. Talking with Scott before we get started here about my bike riding. Back on the bike. Don't I sound good? Exercising is good for you, and if the wind blows harder than 10 miles an hour, I don't get out there and do it.
And always wear a helmet.
Always wear a helmet, because when you're falling down on the pavement, it's too late to put on the helmet. Just like financial planning. What do you know? What a great analogy. You can't put on your financial plan when you're hitting the pavement, when the market's dropping 37 points like it did in 08. But we're going to find out where the market's headed in 2012 with the...
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
That's a wonderful thing.
I agree.
All right, Scott, so what do you have for us today?
Well, for Wednesday's market, fairly flat market. Dow down 27 points, closed
flat
at 12,938. You know, we're eyeing that 13,000 level. Still right in the ballpark. S&P down 4.5 points, NASDAQ down 15 points. Oil flat, thankfully, to close at 106.
That's very interesting. Why is it flat?
Gold up 20. So we've got kind of a...
What do you call that? A divergence?
Mixed message there.
Fancy word is divergence.
Yeah.
Conflictual.
Yeah, we've got a mixed message.
My wife
message
tells me I'm conflictual
sure.
All the time, so now I'm hearing that the market is now too.
20 points on gold is a pretty strong move, almost all the way back up to $1,800 an ounce.
I'm a little interested to hear what you say, if you want to finish doing the numbers, but we need to talk about why oil didn't go up, because I was reading a report that Iran had... The UN folks come in and said, okay, I'm glad you're here, but you're not looking at anything.
Yeah.
And the UN was expecting to inspect facilities. And they said, no. You could stay and you could talk to our officials, but you're not looking at nothing.
Yeah. Why would the UN expect them to be granted access?
Well, I think they got that impression. Come over. You can look at everything. And they got there and said, well, thanks for coming. And, you know, we're glad to talk to you. What do you want to talk about? What kind of concessions did you bring with you?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, the big difference between oil and gold is that everybody has to use gold, so there's more resistance to increasing prices than there is for gold, right.
Right. More resistance price on oil or gold?
There's more resistance from the public to see oil prices go up.
Right, okay.
There are
consequences, everybody's using
basically.
It.
Right.
Okay.
Gold is just traded like a commodity, you know, just like a speculative commodity at this point.
Okay.
Especially at $1,800 an ounce.
That's some heavy-duty stuff.
Yeah, so we'll see. Walmart, another rough day on Wednesday, had a rough day on Tuesday. It's been the Dow's worst performer, lost a little over 6% on the week for Walmart.
What's going on with them?
Well, their numbers haven't been very – retail numbers have been mixed at best. But to give you an idea, we talked yesterday about the Dow and maybe why that's not such a great index. The Walmart shares in and of themselves today accounted for 11 points of the 26 points that the Dow was down. That's why you can't pay too much attention to the Dow.
Because it's dollar-weighted.
That's because it's dollar-weighted.
It's not
That's right.
The average gain of 30 stocks.
Right, and there's only 30 stocks. So if one of the companies has a big day one way or the other, it can really impact them.
Well, and the other one we look at a lot, professional money managers do, is the S&P. Now, the S&P 500 is also an index of stocks, and it is price weighted as well.
Market cap.
Market cap. Okay, so not the price, but the market. Okay, yeah, you're exactly right, Scott. But it's can be distorted by the fact that some of the companies that are larger.
Apple has a significant impact on the S&P.
Okay.
Not so, as significant as Walmart has on
now,
the Dow.
Now, the other way to do it, there's another way to do it, and it's what, just equal weighting for
you
the...
You do equal weight. No.
Okay, so you can either do... Okay, I know I'm starting to talk into another language here. The point is that the Dow is not necessarily the best indication of what's happening to the overall market because it only reflects those 30 stocks, and it can be heavily skewed by the price movements of a few stocks.
Right, especially with 30 stocks, we have stocks that are priced at $120 and stocks that are priced at $8. So there's really, it's not fair for the little guys, so to speak.
So we really need to focus on the S&P 500.
Yeah, the broader index.
Or even the broad market in general.
Yeah, the broader
index. What's the broadest market we have? Isn't it like the Wilshire 5000?
Yeah.
And that, what is that? That's an index that pretty much takes all of the stocks?
Pretty much all the domestic stocks into account, yeah.
So you get the whole market, so to speak.
Yeah, you get the whole market, although it is useful for a portfolio manager to be able to identify which parts of the market, either right, small cap, large cap, are working differently.
Okay, that's a good way to do it.
Economic news for Wednesday, home sales reports. January sales of existing homes topped expectations, which was good, but at the same time, they revised December's number down fairly significantly, which was not so good.
But the supply of homes on the market fell, right?
Supply of homes on the market fell to a 7-year low. There's actually an inventory right now of just only a little bit over 6 months for existing homes.
Now, is that does that or does that not, Mr. Connor, include the inventory of homes that are held by
it does
banks?
Not. It does not.
So the banks can say, okay, it's time to shove some more inventory
That's
onto
right.
the market.
Exactly.
So we could expect that to happen.
It has to come on the market at some point.
Well, especially if home sales are up. Okay. We're getting the fanning of the 5-second warning from Lisa, so we need to take a quick break, I promise, and we'll be right back.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read, you'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
Oh, we love to break it down here on Real Money, and we're going to continue talking about this activity in the market. Now we're talking about real estate before the break, about home sales, and our joint prediction Scott and I are making is that we'll start seeing now banks starting to push more inventory onto the market.
Yeah, they've been easing that so-called shadow inventory into the market for some time now, but there's still a lot on the books that has to come out to the general market.
Listen, it's at least encouraging that, hey, rates, can they get any lower?
I mean, prices were down a little bit in this last release, but I think all signs point to a housing bottom at some point this year.
Okay.
So that's good.
That's very good.
That's good.
I like that.
We have to do our Greek update for the day.
Oh, Lord. I was hoping we were going to be able to get away
with
not
doing
it.
No, what is a day without a Greek update? Fitch, credit ratings agency Fitch, similar to Moody's and S&P, came out on Wednesday before the market, said they were cutting the credit rating for Greece from triple C to single C.
So is that near default? What do they call that?
It says that indicates that a default is highly likely in the near term. Now, but hang on a second.
Hold on, wait a minute. I've got a definition right here. Let me look at it. Okay. Okay, a C is 1 foot in the grave, 1 foot on the banana peel.
Well, here's how silly this is. A C is highly likely to default in the near term, right?
Okay.
Now, let's go back to Monday. We talked about the deal that Greece was going to do. They were going to swap out half of their
bonds.
That
was going to help fix things, right?
Right. They were going to take their bonds with private shareholders and swap them out for other bonds, right, in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. Well, Fitch's definition of a default is a distressed debt exchange.
Isn't that what they just did?
That's what they just announced
they
were going to do.
So why would they move to a C? Why wouldn't they go? What's below C?
Because they don't have a choice now. They
Okay.
They had
but what's below C for Fitch? Is it a D?
It's probably triple D. Okay. I mean, I don't know because I don't really work in that area.
That's not part of our
That's not part our of our
portfolio.
Process. Yeah.
We don't get much in that category, right?
No. We don't do anything in triple D. We do some high yield stuff sometimes in our more aggressive portfolios.
But that's more in the B range.
Yeah. Anything below triple B minus is considered to be junk or high yield, however you want to term it. And we use it sometimes in our more aggressive portfolios. What you have to realize about high yield bonds is that from a risk standpoint, they behave very much like equity.
Because their value and the price of those bonds has a whole lot to do more with the fundamentals of the company. In other words, if the company strengthens and you hear the company have a good report, they have good quarter, they're making money, then the value is going to go up because the price had been down because of their junk rating.
And that pricing system can be as volatile as equity pricing. So
I would not be surprised at all, yeah.
Yeah, we look at that more as an aggressive or a risk-on type of an asset.
Well, you know, it's really interesting, ladies and gentlemen, is when we get into another category, which we'll throw another curveball at, we also have convertible bonds, where a bond, by the way it's written when they originally issue the bond, to create some additional, you know, sexiness for the bond, is they will issue it with the ability to be converted from bond to stock.
And you can also get a reverse convertible.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Which goes the other way.
Is that the one where you have to crank it yourself to get the top down? Or?
It's more like a put. It's more of a
downside. Okay, so you... Okay, well, that's...
Protection.
Okay, that's beyond the scope of this course today, Scott. You know, you give Scott a little bit of room, and now he runs with it. Okay.
All right, I'm going to go nostalgic on you now. Well-known company filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy this week. Do you want to guess? Well-known for door-to-door salespeople.
I'm gonna pass.
Fuller Brush Company.
I was thinking of vacuum, but I didn't know what it was called.
Fuller Brush Company traces its roots back to 1906, known for an army of traveling salesmen claimed Chapter 11 bankruptcy Tuesday. They had been taken over by a private equity firm about 5 years ago. They were in some hot water and finally went ahead and filed bankruptcy this week.
I know there's a joke there, but I'm not even going to try.
Well, it points the difference how fast economies move. Here's a company that's only just barely 100 years old. They're out of business, and nobody wants Fuller Brushes anymore. And then you look at a company like Apple, and we were just talking about how we could do basically all of our personal computing on our phones now. I mean, think about how much difference that is. And for an investor, things move so fast.
Well, I think the real takeaway from that, Scott, is that, you know, a company like a Fuller Brush or a Hostess, you know,
Hostess is another iconic brand.
Or Kodak now is not even making cameras. All these changes are why it is so critical. Number one, not to get attached to stocks just because of nostalgic reasons or because somebody left it to you or you work for the company. And you got to be diversified.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we have a rule. When we do our 19-point inspection, we analyze people's portfolios. We really want to get down below 5. I'd like to get closer to 1% on any individual stock holding unless you're really on purpose trying to buy that. And like we do with one of our strategies, the tactical portfolio, where we're managing a little bit more aggressively. But this is why we've got to be so careful with these individual stocks. Okay, Lisa.
What if the process of creating your financial plan was easy, hassle-free, and straightforward? What if it was conducted by a friendly professional and there was nothing expected of you in return? It almost sounds too good to be true, right? It's the way David Holland has been doing business at his firm, Holland Financial, for over 15 years. Since day one, it has been David's mission to provide individuals with practical solutions for their retirement needs. Financial planning doesn't have to be complicated or stressful. To learn more about our services, visit us at hollandfinancial.com or call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your complimentary consultation. That number again is 888-747-7526.
All right, we're back, and we're just having a super exciting conversation about what's going on in the market. And I want to get to this. News out that the president's administration, President Obama, has some movement or ideas about restructuring the corporate tax plan. We've talked in the past on the show about our corporate tax rates in the United States being significantly higher than they are around the world, 39%, and a lot of other countries have brought their taxes down to be more competitive. So what does that do? Well, that causes people to shift, some of the corporations that do business in the United States, some of them shifting operations and things overseas. Not good. And so we're seeing a glimmer of hope that we may see a reduction in corporate tax rates. Now, They're also talking about cutting out deductions and all of that. But it is something that they look like maybe they're trying to simplify the code.
It seems to me that both parties agree that we need to cut the corporate tax rate. But it's a matter of how and who gets credit and all that nonsense.
I told them they just need to make it all the same. Just everybody pays 10%.
You did.
And no deductions, no exemptions, just 10% off the top.
Yeah, you did. Well, we need to get a stronger signal out of WELE and see if we can get it to reach.
Well, we've got it on Rod. We've got it. We've got it in San Augustine. I mean, we've got it.
We're heading that way.
Yeah. Well, speaking of taxes, I know you're just busting at the seams to give us an update on what.
Yeah, I know you'll like this story. Mr. Buffett is back in the news today. Warren Buffett, in an interview with CNN. Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey was asked about the so-called Buffett rule and whether or not people who make over $1 million should pay higher rates of taxes. And Governor Christie responded, well, he should just shut up. I'm tired of hearing about it.
I can't believe he said that. I can't believe it.
He's known for frankness.
I think we do need to be frank, and I think people need to recognize that, you know, I mean, enough already. So, you know, if you want to send extra money in, ladies and gentlemen, the IRS will gladly take it.
That's what he said. He said Mr. Buffett should just write a check and shut up. Tired of hearing about it. If he wants to give the government more money, he's got the ability to write a check. Go ahead and write it.
Well, speaking of writing bigger checks to the government, one of the things that we need to prepare for now, and I'm a bit of a I'm an optimistic cynic. Does that make sense? I'm a skeptical optimist, maybe. And I think that we're going to be looking, regardless of who ends up being elected president and also the congressional races, I think it's real likely we could see tax rates jump in 2013.
There's no question that we have to close that gap between debt and income.
Well, and here's the problem. Dividend income is directly in the sights of all these tax changes. Listen to this, ladies and gentlemen. Dividend income right now is being taxed at 15%.
Right.
Under some of these tax proposals.
From the Bush tax cuts.
That's right, those Bush tax cuts. And Obama, in his proposal, his budget for 2013, is showing the taxes on dividends. When you factor in the health care, the Obamacare, all of this stuff, there's an extra tax. Get up close to 45% on dividends.
Yeah, that would have a chilling effect on stock markets.
Chilling. That would be like dropping, you know, putting your stick in your feet in a bucket of ice water.
Yeah.
So tripling the taxes. Now, why would it chill the market? Well, there would be an automatic you know, nothing is worth more than what somebody will pay you for it or what you get out of it. And so when people look at the value of stocks, they look at what the dividends pay. And so they're looking at what do they get. It's not what you make, it's what you get to keep.
Right.
So the dividends then become less attractive because you're having to pay 45% to uncle.
Yeah, it makes municipal bonds terrifically attractive. They're tax-free and have yield.
Well,
and
they may be, but maybe not for long. We'll see.
Yeah, that would be another one. But it's not impossible.
Did you catch, I know that after you left on yesterday's show, I talked a little bit about immigration, okay? And I don't know if you had a chance to catch the rest of it, but I talked a little bit about immigration yesterday. And one of the things I didn't get to, which I thought was very interesting, there's all this debate about, and of course, Mexico doesn't want us to build the fence, you know, and their officials saying, don't do it, that's bad for our bad neighbors, and don't do it. Well, it turns out, and of course, we haven't heard a peep about this, but I did some research. And apparently, if this isn't the ultimate in hypocrisy, Mexico is building a fence along its southern border to keep out the Guatemalans. I mean, come on. So anyway, I meant to tell you that, ladies and gentlemen, yesterday. That falls in the category of just being flat out laughable. And one more thing before we go to our next break. This is pretty funny. Okay, we get these surveys in the mail, and I opened it up. 2012 Presidential Platform Survey, this huge thing. It came addressed to my wife. So I open it up, and I'm like, what is this? So it says, official party document, do not destroy, and has all these questions of what she, you know, they want her to tell them about the platform that, and she's registered, and
it looks like a voting ballot.
It does. And so they want to know all this stuff for the party she's registered with, and you get to, of course, the bottom. The whole point of it is they want you to send them money. And I left it on the counter, and so she started filling it out. And I said, she goes, did you want me to send that in? I said, well, I just opened it for you. And she said, oh, I thought you want me to fill it out. So what's funny about these things is she says, well, don't they need to know this for what they're going to? I said, you know, they don't care what we think. They have their agendas, and it's the same for both parties. So when you get these things in the mail, it's about getting your money. That's all it is. But we're dealing with real money here. We're going to take a quick break, and I'm going to talk about yield and how you can do the best with your money when we come back from this break.
Creating a world with less cancer takes a team effort. It takes survivors and caregivers and regular folks like you and me who all unite at Relay for Life. This year, nearly 4 million people nationwide will come together to celebrate, remember, and fight back. We're the American Cancer Society, the official sponsor of birthdays. Visit us at relayforlife.org.
If you like what you hear, you'll love what you see. Watch Real Money with David Holland, the TV show, Mondays at 12:30 on WESH Channel 2, starting February 20th. The following top secret message is ready for declassification.
Yes, it is, and let's get to it. I've been talking in the last couple of programs about yield and seeking returns on your money, and there's a couple ways to do that. You can do that with, obviously, investing in some of the fixed income securities we've talked about, where you buy into a bond. And as I shared with you previously, important to understand that you can seek yield, get higher returns, higher yields on these monies. But when you pursue yield, you've got to give up on two things to get more yield. You've got to give up on how long you're committing the dollars. I met with a gentleman a couple weeks ago, and he had gone to longer term bonds, and there's like 22 year average maturity, trying to get a better return. Well, that's the obvious give up. And then also going with lower quality to get better returns, like Scott and I talked about earlier in the program today. So you've got to be careful, because both of those represent risk. The second one's a more obvious one, and that is that if you go to a lower quality bond, Greek, for example, you know, the Greek bonds were yielding huge numbers, ridiculous numbers, you know, 20, 30, 50, 100% returns on these bonds was the expected yield. But then we end up seeing, as part of this deal to keep Greek afloat, the Greek government afloat, the bondholders had to take a 50% haircut. So there's the risk of going with lower risk. You don't have a more glaring example than that, than having these higher risk bonds that are poorly rated. And as they become more and more likely to default. And here's the thing with corporate bonds. You know, we see this happening with the bailout, but corporate bonds, if a company goes under, you may get nothing or pennies on the dollar with a corporate bond. Same with municipalities. There can be problems there where you actually don't get your money back or only part of it. Now, the other way people seek yield on bonds and other similar types of investments is to go longer term. You say, well, what's the harm in that? I'm 60, I'm retiring in a couple of years. I'm going to want income for a long time, so why don't I just buy a long-term bond and I'll get that income? Well, okay, that sounds good on the surface, but one of the things to be careful about, let's say you decide to go with a 20-year bond because you can get a little bit better return. Let's say you can get, just as an example, 4% on your money. All right, that's good. You're going to get that yield on your money, but the risk you are taking, you're pouring cement. Because you better hope you never need that money, needing the principal, because when we start seeing interest rates go up, those bonds that are purchased, that 20-year bond, is going to fall in value significantly. If interest rates were to go up 1%, which we've got a lot of room for increases in interest rates with where rates are today, then that bond could lose 10, 15, 20% or more as those interest rates rise. The bond, if interest rates rose enough, the bond could get cut in half just by virtue of the value. Now, if you hold it at maturity the full 20 years, you get the face amount of the bond. But what if somewhere along the line, something changes in your financial life and you need to sell some or all of those bonds? Has something ever changed in your financial life? Well, of course. And I'll bet you it will. One of the things I very often talk about when I build financial plans for people is we always come back to this planning process, and it's very deliberate. I consider all of their assets, and we build a plan that takes everything into consideration, and here's how you get your income, and this is how everything is done. We got an overall plan, then we figure out what to do with the money to invest it in the different types of products or whatever we do. One of the things we have to realize is things are going to change. So I often say that the plans are carved in jello. They're not carved in stone. because we're going to have to come back to it and make adjustments along the way. Well, if you find yourself needing to make that kind of change and you have locked yourself in, so to speak, with a low interest rate environment into long-term bonds, well, you may have a real problem. Imagine also if then that the company that issued that bond started having financial difficulty as well. Do you think that would affect the value of the bond? You betcha. And as Scott shared earlier in the show, these bonds that are higher yielding, lower quality bonds, these junk bonds, they trade a lot more like stocks because the risk associated with them and the ability to get your money on these bonds has a lot more to do with how the company plays out versus, you know, the interest being paid or anything else. So these are some things to think about as you look at investing in fixed income securities. All right. I'm not going to talk about fixed income securities anymore for a while, but when we take a quick break, we come back, I want to talk a little bit about mutual funds and some of the basics and things that you need to be on the lookout for, understanding how mutual funds work, and I think it will be very helpful. Stick around.
Many people invest without ever knowing what they pay in investment fees. When was the last time you dropped your car off for service and told them to fix whatever they want without getting an estimate first? I'll bet never. Why treat your portfolio any different? Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
Okay, we are back, and I promise to talk a little bit about mutual funds. Now, let me tell you something. A lot of people invest in mutual funds. It's huge. Worldwide, $25 trillion is in mutual funds. That's a lot of money. And according to Morningstar, recently, I think it was at the end of 2011, 26,000 mutual funds. It's a big business. Now, let me share this real quick. A lot of people have sort of a general idea about mutual funds, but a lot of people don't really know what they are. So if you're not really clear about how mutual funds work, then that's okay. I want to share a few things to kind of bring us all up to the same speed on this, so to speak. One of the reasons why mutual funds are so popular is what you're doing is you're hiring somebody to manage a pool of money with a specific objective or goal. And there's a document that says here's how the manager is going to manage that money. And it's called a prospectus. You probably have heard that word. Well, there are a lot of different types of mutual funds, 26,000. You imagine they come in a lot of different shapes and sizes. Some of them focus on the large companies like the Dow companies, the Dow Index. Or they focus on smaller companies. They focus just on foreign companies. They might focus just on technology companies, healthcare companies. They have niches that they can target. And so they can be very helpful for individuals as well as professional money managers to build a portfolio to try to achieve what you're looking to do. Now, one of the things that we do to give you a little bit of insight into how this can be done, and Scott spent a lot of time doing this, is talking to the fund managers, understanding what they're doing, and enabling us to build a portfolio that's very diversified. Again, we talked about Fuller Brush and other companies that go by the wayside. Well, we want to keep a very diversified portfolio, and we believe strongly that that can help reduce your risk and still give you upside potential. The thing that most people find about mutual funds is not only do you have that professional management with a specific focus, but you've also got liquidity. It's a liquid investment. You can get your money back out. Now, the market value, the value of that mutual fund may change day to day, and it very often will, but you've got liquidity because they're always open-ended mutual funds. A typical mutual fund is getting money from new investors all the time, and so you can get your money out pretty easily. Contrast that to 20-year bond I talked about before the break. You're pouring cement, or if you're buying a REIT, I've talked about that on a previous show. You buy stuff that's privately held or not publicly traded, a lot harder to get your money out of. So think about that. Oh, real estate. Somebody investing in real estate. The real estate market obviously affected our area here in Central Florida. But think about the ability to try to get your money back out of real estate or a mortgage that you hold on somebody's property. These things alternatively are not as liquid. So mutual funds are pretty popular and they're low cost to get professional management. One of the things that we do when we are picking mutual funds for our clients and building those portfolios, part of our job is to keep costs as low as possible. So we primarily are looking for no-load funds. That means that there's no sales charge to get in or get out. You know, you're not paying a broker where they're going to get a commission. We're going to buy them at cost, so to speak. We go down to the factory and pick it up. We don't have to pay for the freight. And so we buy those and we look for low cost funds. Every mutual fund, even if you don't have to pay a fee to get into them, they're not free. There's still an operating cost. It's called an expense ratio. You still have to pay for that. That might be between as low as 0.25% or even a little bit less, up to 2 or 3% some of the mutual funds. Now, the average mutual fund, if you take all 26,000 mutual funds and you push the button and average the cost, it's around 1.3-1.4% or so. So very commonly, that's something that people need to look at. And one of the things we try to do is keep the fee below 1% on the funds. So think about a mutual fund as a shopping cart. It's a good analogy. The fund manager goes to the quote-unquote stock market, and they have their prospectus, the list of things they're supposed to buy, the types of investments that should be in that shopping cart, the mutual fund, and they buy stocks. Now, there may be other mutual fund managers there who are buying stocks for their shopping carts, might be buying, just like you buy Folgers coffee, somebody else might buy the same thing right behind you or needs to buy chicken and they buy the same chicken you do. It's an open market. So one of the things that we have to watch out for when we are buying mutual funds is to make sure that we don't end up owning too much of any one company by virtue of the funds that we're using. So these are just some things to be thinking about with mutual funds. I'll share more on another show about mutual funds and how they work, but they can be a very helpful part of diversifying and reducing your risk by not being susceptible to what just one company may happen or what may do. All right. Thanks for being with me and join me again for another show.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.